From Erie to Harrisburg, Williamsport to Pittsburgh, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, as 2022 draws to a close, David Taylor is joined by Rebecca Euler and Stephen Bloom for a Capital Watch look back at the issues and events that made news this past year. And as we celebrate the joys of the Christmas season, I'll have our traditional Lincoln Radio Journal reading of the biblical account of the birth of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. For the second consecutive year, the city of Philadelphia has experienced over 500 homicides. The number of killings in 2022 was slightly lower than the record number of homicides in 2021, but only the second time that more than 500 deaths were reported in back-to-back years. Philadelphia is gripped by a crime wave, at least partially attributable to lax law enforcement and prosecution policies. Those policies have resulted in the impeachment of Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner. The state Senate will now hold a trial to determine whether or not he should be removed from office. The political machine of Philadelphia power broker Johnny Doc Daugherty is unraveling amidst federal prosecution of the union leader for embezzlement. Daugherty and others are accused of draining more than $600,000 from the coffers of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 98. In the run-up to Daugherty's trial, several of his close associates have already entered guilty pleas. Although the exact dates of the special elections remain up in the air, candidates for three state House districts have been selected. At stake is party control of the lower chamber. Democrats won a majority of seats in the general election, but one death and two resignations have given the GOP at least a temporary numerical advantage. All three of the seats are in Allegheny County. In the 32nd District, Republican Clayton Walker will face off against Democrat Robert Pagana. The 34th District will feature a contest between Republican Don Nevels and Democrat Matt Gurgley. And in the 35th District, Republican Abigail Salisbury and Democrat Joe McAndrew will square off. All three districts lean heavily Democratic. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The national spotlight was on Pennsylvania this past year with high-profile races for governor and U.S. Senate, and lawmakers continued to battle Governor Tom Wolf on a wide range of policy issues. Our Capital Watch crew is here with a look back at the year that was. Host David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and by Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation. David?
And welcome to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your Capital Watch All-Stars from the Commonwealth Foundation, Vice President Steve Bloom. Steve, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, David. Delighted to be here.
Outstanding. And as ever, our good friend, the President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, Rebecca Euler. Rebecca?
Hi. Hi, Dave. Great to be here again. Merry Christmas.
And right back at you and Steve and all the listeners, spirit of the season to you. Thanks for taking time to join us. So as we're here in the full swing of the holiday season, coming to the end of the year that was, I thought we would take a little time here to look back at what transpired. And in particular, the things that we think on as being pretty important. Things that were concluded, things that will continue into the new year. But, you know, on both sides of the ledger, there are important things to note. I'd start off with, that there were several major victories for the business community and especially for Pennsylvania industry that first of all, one of the major arteries for delivering Pennsylvania energy and energy products is finally operational. The Mariner East 2 project by Energy Transfer, going 300 miles all the way across the Commonwealth from, you know, southwestern PA to the Delaware River at Marcus Hook. That's been a long time coming. You know, it is very satisfying, despite how long it took. It's very satisfying to see that we can still accomplish great things like that today.
And, you know, you mentioned it's been a long time coming. When you think about something like the Mariner East Pipeline Complex, that is, it's not a 6 month or a 1 year window of planning and construction. It's years and years and years. And similarly, we've seen in Western Pennsylvania the opening this year of the Shell cracker plant,
mm-hmm.
which is really going to be a foundation for economic growth, not only just in Western Pennsylvania, all across the Commonwealth. And those projects, they're 10 years in the making.
You bet.
And if you look at the headwinds that they face with the political outcry against fossil fuels and utilizing any sort of right-of-ways that are anywhere within any distance of any neighborhood or school, I mean, the headaches, the things that made it very hard to construct and finance these projects were all fought through, and the proponents were diligent, and Pennsylvania legislators and governors over that time, in particular Governor Corbett back in the day at the beginning, took some big steps to make those things materialize. And now here we are looking back at 2022, and they happened.
Yeah.
They're functioning and making Pennsylvania better today for our citizens, for our kids, our grandkids.
I got to be at the grand opening ceremony in Monaca for the Shell Polymers facility, and it is a world-class facility. It is jaw-droppingly awesome. It is like a small city. They said if you straightened out all the pipe and put it end-to-end, it would run from New York City to Washington, D.C. That if you unspooled all the cabling and wiring, put it end-to-end, it would go from New York almost all the way to Los Angeles. Like, this is an enormous facility. But what's really awesome, and again, just to explain to the listeners why this is important, that this facility is taking the ethane from the Marcellus and Utica shales in southwestern Pennsylvania and in southeastern Ohio and northern West Virginia, taking that ethane gas, cracking a hydrogen molecule off of it, turning the ethane into ethylene and then into polyethylene. Well, what's polyethylene? Polyethylene is the feedstock for a very, very wide spectrum of consumer products. And at the Shell Polymers Center for Excellence, that they're testing out all of these different processes so that they know that the product they're delivering to customers will work right. Everything from, you know, saran wrap to PVC piping for home plumbing, to that they were stamping out those big heavy buckets, like at Lowe's, if you buy paint or you buy, you know, like any kind of, you know, gravel or whatever, it comes in those big heavy buckets. It was just like stamping them out, like one every 5 seconds, just rolling off the plate. And so they were stamping out milk cartons, like you get your half gallon jug with the little handle on it. All of the things that go into the consumer products in our lives that make things, you know, clean and convenient
and safe,
sanitary. Like, this facility is now cranking out on a pace of 1,600,000 tons of polyethylene per year, 3 billion
wow.
pounds. And they're tiny little white pebbles, like not even as big as an aspirin, but that feedstock can be used for all of these different products. It gives manufacturers that use that feedstock an actual reason to co-locate in Pennsylvania near the source of that feedstock. Like, this is going to be an engine of prosperity for generations. And again, it's American feedstock through an American plant, American workers, American product. This is what we want a whole lot more of. And yes, after years of struggle, we finally have this baby up and running, and it ain't going nowhere.
And I know your organization, the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, was in the thick of all that.
Yes, sir. We have, like with the Mariner East and other, you know, infrastructure projects. The Atlantic Sunrise comes to mind. That we went and testified at every last DEP hearing, FERC hearing, every open forum where somebody needed to go to advocate for why these things are important. And to get back to Mariner East, you know, the biggest challenge that we have, I mean, the energy reserves that have been discovered, the natural gas byproducts, these are world historic volumes of energy and feedstock. But they're in the most remote parts of Pennsylvania, you know, up on the northern tier in the far southwest corner. We need to have more infrastructure to be able to deliver these resources from where they're harvested to the downstream customers who can benefit from them. And so to have, you know, the Mariner East 2 finally up and running to deliver these volumes of energy and byproducts, like, this is, it's not only the thing itself, but it is the work that now is going to be possible because these institutions and facilities exist.
And this is kind of the difference between making headlines and making history.
Yes.
You know, the commentators on national TV aren't talking about Pennsylvania finally being able to access these key aspects of its energy infrastructure. But when people look back on 2022,
oh, yeah,
25 years from now, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, they'll see it's a turning point as we released for the public good the opportunity to utilize these resources for the benefit of our society.
Well, and this is really exciting for me too, because from the perspective of the transportation industry, as you're sitting here talking about all of the industry that's going to develop as a result of having this Shell polymer plant here in Pennsylvania, and on the back end, the natural gas industry that's, you know, feeding that industry, the transportation industry, the trucking industry is an integral part of all of that. All of those consumer products that are going to be produced by those Pennsylvania manufacturers that are, you know, are a part of that process that come from the Shell plant, all of the goods that are shipped out across the country and across the world from Pennsylvania manufacturers and from this region are going to be shipped by truck, the vast majority of them. And like I said, on the back end, all of the natural gas producers in the state. It's the trucking industry that makes sure that they have the equipment they need to operate and are supplied in the very remote areas of Pennsylvania. So the transportation industry is going to, you know, thrive and prosper as a part of this too, and needs to be set up so that it can succeed to support the industry.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. So, Rebecca, looking back on the year, what do you think of as being the you know, the key issues, the key events that transpired?
Well, I mean, following back on how integral the trucking industry is and the transportation industry to all the other industries that we talk about, manufacturing, energy, all the other industries that we talk about here in Pennsylvania, the big win we had this year was stopping PennDOT's plan to toll 9 bridges across the state. They were planning to toll 9 interstate bridges and had done so through through a process that really didn't include any public input or you know, talking to the folks who actually would be paying those tolls, the folks who would be driving across those bridges every day, and specifically the trucking industry that would be paying the largest portion of those tolls. So we challenged that in court and also through the legislative process, and really won three strikes and they're out victory. It was stopped twice in court, and then finally the legislature passed a bill that stopped the tolling. PennDOT is still moving forward with the 9 bridge projects, but they are not going to be tolled. So that was a big victory, and that really sets up the trucking industry for being more efficient, effective, and being able to support all those other industries that we just talked about in the state and helping them succeed. So that was our big victory this year. Really happy about that. I mean, I think we have to talk in the future here about how we make sure our infrastructure is well-funded for the future, but this year, we're chalking that up to a victory.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Steve, this 2022, you know, brings down the curtain on the Wolf administration, that Tom Wolf has been Pennsylvania's chief executive for 8 years now. And, you know, like reflecting on what Rebecca said, that you had the administration going headlong with this major policy change without respecting or even seeking any of the input from the people who would be directly affected. I think about the, you know, the governor's shutdown order in response to the pandemic, and the way that he didn't even ask what, how would this play out in the real world if I did this? You know, what do you see as being Tom Wolf's legacy, and do you think that the new administration will take up where Wolf left off, or do you think that they'll set a different course?
Well, certainly when Tom Wolf came into office and gave his very first budget proposal speech in February of that year, it was, the speech he gave was all about spending more money and raising taxes. It was the largest spending increase proposed by any governor anywhere in the United States of America that year, and the taxes to go with it. At the Commonwealth Foundation, of course, at that time, I was still a member of the state legislature.
Yes.
But the Commonwealth Foundation was on the case right away, snapping into action to oppose Governor Wolf's massive tax hike proposals. And we were successful, both through the legislative process and through the work that Commonwealth Foundation did in calling the alarm and informing the public of what was going on. 8 years later, we stopped virtually all the tax increases that Governor Wolf proposed over 8 years, and he proposed many. I think there were over 12.
Yeah.
And so that's key. We held the line on that stuff. But also very important, Governor Wolf came into office claiming that he did not support school choice and was for all kids going to public schools and no other options for kids unless they could afford something on their own, like a private school that they could afford on their own due to family wealth. And so despite all that, because of the work done in the legislature by champions of school choice and the work that, again, our organization, Commonwealth Foundation, did in educating not only the public, but lawmakers specifically, and making sure everyone had the most accurate data, under Tom Wolf, we were actually able to achieve unprecedented expansions in school choice opportunities, including in 2022, the biggest ever expansion of the state's Educational Improvement Tax Credit Program, which is probably the most well-established and successful of all our school choice programs. And it allows multiple kids from areas in Pennsylvania where the public schools are failing them to get a great education despite that.
Yes.
And so having an achievement like that with a hostile governor and having it culminate in 2022 with the biggest ever increase is something worth celebrating, but not for too long,
right?
Because there were still kids left on a waiting list who can't get access to that. We've got to do more under the incoming governor in 23.
Yeah. And as we reflect on all this, you know, you think about the, you know, time, energy, effort, and political capital that everybody had to expend just to try to stop the bad things that the Wolf administration had on offer, certainly with my organization, that we have been adamantly opposed to Governor Wolf's unconstitutional electricity tax through the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative Consortium, and that we've battled that to a standstill. It's tied up in court. We're going to win in court. But it's just like you can't help wondering, you know, what would the world be like if we actually had all the stakeholders working together for positive ends instead of just trying to thwart all these destructive things?
Because there's so much good in Pennsylvania, so much potential. You talk about our geography, our natural resources, our transportation infrastructure, our hardworking Pennsylvania laborers. People are willing to get jobs done.
We've got mature institutions of finance. We've got mature and really excellent institutions of higher education. Like, these are all things that other states wish that they had. Of course, as the listeners have heard me say many times, the mindset in Harrisburg too often is, so long as we're not quite as bad as New York, right, and New Jersey, that makes it okay. And that's bunk. That's nonsense. We've got, if we want Pennsylvania to excel, to have the bright future that we deserve, we have to benchmark Pennsylvania against the high performing states. And, you know, Indiana and North Carolina, Ohio in a lot of ways has gone a great distance. In fact, Ohio's state legislature just passed a law declaring natural gas to be green energy and to allow energy harvesting on all public lands. So, like, they're really moving ahead, leveraging their opportunity for the good of their citizens. And boy, I sure would love to see that here.
Well, you're spot on. We are the second biggest energy producer in the nation. We are absolutely poised to take advantage of that and to really excel as a state, as long as we have a plan to do so. So,
and all of this can be done responsibly, you know, with all of the safeguards, all of the sensitivities to the quality of the environment. We all live here too, so it's not as though folks on the pro production side, you know, don't care about clean air and clean water. Of course we do. We live here too. So, Steve, what are your thoughts looking forward to next year? What are the top priorities going to be for your group?
Well, for our group, we're focused at the Commonwealth Foundation on giving all Pennsylvanians the opportunity to prosper. And amongst those people that we especially are concerned about are the kids, the children of Pennsylvania. So we are going to be advocating actively for continued expansion of school choice, competition to make sure that kids have the best opportunities to go to the best schools, whether it's their neighborhood zip code assigned school, whether it's a charter school, whether it's a private school that they can access through educational improvement tax credits, or whether they're going to benefit from a program like the Lifeline Scholarship that will allow kids in the 15% of the worst performing schools in Pennsylvania to gain access to basically a money follows the child model, so that child can go to a good school, get a good education and a great start in life instead of being assigned by zip code to be in a situation where they're going to always be disadvantaged and not have the opportunity to thrive.
Yeah, and it is hopeful that that Governor-elect Shapiro did give a nod in that direction, and that's one of the things that we hope he will follow through on.
The bills are already being introduced, so we're gonna hopefully get to the point where Governor Shapiro, or incoming Governor Shapiro, can actually do what he mentioned he would do on the campaign trail and support a program like that.
And Rebecca, also, you know, it's important to note that Pennsylvania did enact pro-growth business tax relief and business tax reform in the last session.
Yes.
And that Governor-elect Shapiro has endorsed that and says he's interested in accelerating it.
Yeah, that's a great thing. The corporate net income tax is declining the first of the year to 8.99%. That's the first time since 1995, I believe, we've had change, right? And it will decline 0.5% every year until it gets to 4.99%, which will be the eighth lowest in the nation. But the incoming governor has committed to speeding up that reduction, which is pretty exciting. But the other thing we saw this past year is some small business tax benefits, too, for those pass-through businesses that pay, you know, income tax through their personal income tax. And that was like-kind exchange benefits and also Section 179 expensing increase, which was really helpful for small businesses, too. So happy to see that going forward.
And so, you know, here we are at the turn of the year, and one always gets, you know, wistful about what was, what might have been, and hopeful for what hopefully will be. But I'm grateful that at least in 2023, I get to hang out with you cool guys and get to share the airwaves with you. And actually, to close the program, Rebecca, I think you had a request.
Yes. Well, we all know that supply chain issues have been a little bit of an issue for the past couple of years, and not so much this year as last year. But in the North Pole, I think supply chain issues have continued to be a problem this year. So we have this little poem that I was hoping maybe Dave could read for us, highlighting, you know, how truckers have been able to help out with the issues this year. So,
a dramatic reading. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the land, the season had challenges. Santa needed a hand. Toy parts and components were harder to find, and elves in the factory found themselves in a bind. Without supplies and provisions, even food for reindeer, Christmas morning could bring no surprises this year. Santa was worried, his jolly face looking glum. Mrs. Claus tried to cheer him with sweet sugar plums. "Don't worry, my dear, I know you'll come through. Faith and persistence make wishes come true." When out in the land there arose such a clatter, Santa sprang from his chair to see what was the matter. When what to his wondering eyes did appear across the North Pole, the truckers were here. "We heard you need help," they declared right away. "We're here to assist you with supplies for the sleigh." Elves applauded and cheered, "Hip hooray!" The reindeer put on an impromptu parade. Santa's eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples so merry, when he saw all the provisions the truckers could carry. Each one went to work, and they bustled all day with shipping, receiving, and hauling away. Santa's to-do list got done, and he was checking it twice when he looked up to see the Christmas Eve lights. "Thank you," said Santa to the truckers that eve. "You've given me faith and made me believe. Good folks in this world still make everything right. Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night." And there you have it. Merry Christmas, everybody. Steve, where can people find you?
CommonwealthFoundation.org.
Rebecca?
PMTA.org.
And you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org. Thanks for listening. We will see you in 2023. And now, here's Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. And now, as we celebrate Christmas and the coming New Year, it is once again an appropriate time to reflect back upon that very first Christmas. All too often, Christmas has become simply the holidays, with the true meaning buried beneath the hurried shopping and other pressures of the season. And so, before we close, I'd like to take a couple of minutes and read the account of the birth of Jesus Christ as written by the Apostle Luke. "And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And this taxing was first made when Cyrenius was governor of Syria. And all went to be taxed, every one into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee out of the city of Nazareth into Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. And there were in the same country shepherds, abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of heavenly host, praising God and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. And it came to pass, as the angels were gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, Let us go now, even unto Bethlehem, and see this thing which is come to pass, which the Lord hath made known unto us. And they came with haste, and found Mary, and Joseph, and the babe, lying in a manger. And when they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told them concerning this child. And all they that heard it wondered at those things which were told them by the shepherds. But Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart. And the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things that they had heard and seen, as it was told unto them. With this reminder of the true meaning of the Christmas season, our entire Lincoln Radio Journal family, Capital Watch panelists David Taylor, Rebecca Euler, and Stephen Bloom, along with Community Benefit Spotlight host Joe Geiger, Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi of the Allegheny Report, and commentator Ashley Klingensmith, join with our production assistant Joe Winters, administrative assistant Carol Henry, and our affiliate relations manager Tyler Henry in extending to everyone our best wishes for a blessed Christmas, along with our hopes for peace, prosperity, and many blessings in the new year. We leave you now with Sounds of the Season by our friend Joe Trojak at Progressive Studios. For Lincoln Radio Journal, I'm Loman Henry. Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.